Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me and giving this honorable slot of time. So what I will be talking about is actually what happens to famous and celebrated mesoscopic conductance fluctuations if there is some time dependence. So if you apply an external time dependent field, or you change the shape of your device in time. So basically, what is the possible experiment is just the usual quantum dot. So there is one reservoir with one chemical potential, another reservoir with a different chemical potential, and in addition to that, there could be some AC gates which changes the shape of two-dimensional electron gas, and that imposes some time dependence in the Hamiltonian of the system. So another possible geometry is when you have a ring also connected to two reservoirs, and you just consider AC magnetic flux inside, so that some AC electric field is generated here, and we also have some time dependence of the Hamiltonian of the system. So I will have in mind this quantum dot geometry, but what is important to note that I will always be studying the open quantum dot. So that means that it is beyond the Coulomb blockade regime, where charge fluctuations are very strong. So I mean that the escape time, escape rate gamma, so the inverse time for electron to stay inside the dot, this escape rate is much bigger than mean level separation. So this is basically the condition for open dot. Now, then in order to simplify things, I will consider the dot in so-called ergodic regime. This means that the time electron stays inside the dot is still much bigger than the time to reach the boundary, so-called Tauless, the inverse time is called Tauless energy. So for the time electron stays inside the dot, it reaches many times the boundary, so it probes all the available space, and this is why this regime is called ergodic. And the third condition, which also simplifies consideration, is that the frequency of that time dependence, characteristic frequency, is much higher than both the escape rate and the Tauless energy. Although one can relax this last condition, the frequency could be smaller than the Tauless energy, and practically all the results will stay unchanged, but the frequency should be higher than the escape rate. So this is about the system which I have in mind. Now, what I'm going to study, what questions I'm going to ask. So it is basically needless to repeat in this audience what is mesoscopic fluctuations. So if you studied linear conductance as a function of the constant magnetic field applied to the system, then there is some pattern called magnetic fingerprints, and they are reproducible, but otherwise of random shape. And basically, the variance of these fluctuations, it consists of two parts. One part is such that it is independent of magnetic field. It is so-called diffusion part of the variance, and another part of the variance decreases with increasing the magnetic field. It is called so-called Couperon part, and the, if magnetic field is large enough, then this part is completely killed, and we have the reduction of the variance of fluctuation. So first it fluctuates stronger, and then it fluctuates weaker, and the reduction factor, which is the ratio of these two of variances in these two regimes, is an important quantity, because this quantity somehow is a measure of time reversal symmetry, a measure of the extent to which time reversal symmetry is preserved without the constant magnetic field. So if the system, if there's no magnetic constant magnetic field, then these two contributions are equal to each other, and then the reduction factor is equal to universal value of 2. And this is related with the celebrated Dyson's beta equal 2 in the unitary ensemble of random matrices. So what the main question which I'm going to ask is this. So when we have time dependence, then certainly the notion of time reversal symmetry becomes subtle. So you may say that time reversal symmetry is not there. Then the question is, okay, if it is not there, then this reduction factor can deviate from the universal value of 2, and that the magnitude of this deviation will tell you how much is the how big is the effect of the violation of time reversal symmetry by the external time dependent field. And then the question is, what are the conditions when this deviation is large? How does this deviation depend on the intensity of time-dependent field? And more specifically, how does it depend on the spectral content? So suppose that you have the same intensity, but different spectrum spectrum of time-dependent field. And then the question is, how does it depend on the spectral content? So this is the list of answers which I'm going then to discuss in more detail. So first question was, is there any difference between the noise-like field with broad spectrum and the harmonic field with the delta function-like spectrum if the intensity, if the integral is the same? And it turns out, and this is the first result, that actually there is a big difference. So the noise is much more effective in suppressing mesoscopic fluctuations than the harmonic field. So at large intensities I, the noise suppresses the variance proportional to the 1 over I, and the harmonic field suppresses only as 1 over the square root of I. This is the first question, which has actually nothing to do with effect of violation of time reversal symmetry. It is simply the effect of dephasing by the time-dependent external field. Now, the next question is about the reduction factor. So it turns out, actually, that the reduction factor in most cases stays unchanged. It stays equal to 2. And only at some special conditions it deviates substantially. It again depends on the spectral content, but these dependencies will be discussed later. So maybe the most important consequence of this work is that we predict some commensurability effect in the time or the frequency domain. Suppose that you have the external field with spectrum which contains two harmonic components with different frequencies. Now, let the ratio of these two frequencies be alpha. So then, by changing the frequency of one of the components, you change this ratio alpha. And what we predict is that the variance of conductance fluctuations can vary very sharply at commensurate points. So at commensurate points, the variance is much larger than in the points where the frequencies are incommensurate, or this fraction has very big denominator. So this is what I call control, AC control of DC conductance fluctuation. So just changing one of the frequency, you may enhance the conductance fluctuations at some selected points by a factor of two or so. Now, why this all happens? Actually, there is one single reason for all these peak dependencies, and let me explain it in a little bit more theoretical detail. So the theory of mesoscopic fluctuations and weak localization is based on is built using so-called diffusions and Couperons, diffusion and particle hole and particle propagators, and all the properties coherence in quantum conductors are described in terms of these two of these two elements. So what is the difference between the case where there is no external field, time-dependent field, and in case where the time-dependent field is present? The main difference is that if you don't have any time dependence of the Hamiltonian, then this guy depends basically on the difference of of times in the beginning and at the end. So it depends on the difference of t and t prime, and that is because of the homogeneity in the time space. The same is valid for this function. But if you have time dependence of any type, then this object starts to depend on actually three times. So, and the most important dependence is on the additional time, which I call the running time, tau or t, which was absolutely not present when you don't have time dependence of the Hamiltonian. So, then what is the main feature of this diffusion propagators in the ergodic regime? In the ergodic regime, they describe basically the decoherence effect. So both of them are exponentials of some decoherence rate or dephasing rate. And usually this dephasing function gamma d or gamma c is just constant when you don't have any time dependence. In case of time dependence, it starts to depend on time, and in the general case, so it exists. It consists of two parts. So one part is trivial. It is just due to the possibility for electrons to escape the sample. So it escapes. Then another electron comes in with completely different phase, and that is one trivial phase breaking mechanism. So this is an escape rate. Another part is related with external time dependent field, and this is, if you consider, for instance, the electric field which is inside the sample, so this is the vector potential. Now, One knows that in this ergodic regime, the situation can be described by the random matrix theory. And this effect is no exclusion. But what is important here is that if you have time-dependent Hamiltonian, then you may construct two different types of random matrix theory. You may derive it. So I don't have enough time to describe this derivation. But what is important is that even if you don't have constant magnetic field, and you are in so-called orthogonal ensemble, but you have some time dependence, then at low frequencies, frequencies much smaller than the Tauless energy, the situation is simple. You simply add an additional part which also belongs to an orthogonal ensemble. So this matrix is just symmetric and real. And this is electric field, which is also real. Now, but if you have high frequency, which is higher than the Tauless energy, situation changes, and you have another random matrix ensemble with H0 belonging to the orthogonal ensemble, A being vector potential, which is real, but this additional matrix, which is necessary to introduce in order to introduce time dependence, this matrix is real anti-symmetric, and the imaginary part of the random matrix arises. So this is something which one can, which one should know about random matrix theory in case of time dependence. Now, then, of course, this dephasing rate is a little bit too complicated to tackle, although it's of course possible to do. But in order to understand what is going on, and also for experimental applications, it is useful to think of the situation where the frequency is much higher than the escape rate. And then, in this situation, this field or that field, it fluctuates so strongly, it oscillates so strongly, then one can average over such oscillations. So there was an integral here, which should be integrated over t minus t prime, and this is of the order of t minus t prime, of the order of inverse escape rate. And if this fluctuation is stronger than that, one can simply average this guy, and then the integral is done simply by multiplying by t minus t prime. So then we arrive at a very simple construction. So what happens? The escape rate is becoming a function of the running time only. So for the case of no time dependence, it was a constant, and now it depends on the running time in the following way. Now, here is the main message which I'm going to deliver. So let's consider the difference between the noise and harmonic situation. When we have a white noise, an extreme case of white noise, then the fields are uncorrelated at all, and that's why in this square the cross term vanishes after averaging. So then we arrive at a constant dephasing rate. And what is important, it is the same for the diffusons and Couperons, for particle hole and particle propagators. And what we see, it is simply some renormalization of the defacing due to escape, and nothing else happens. So I can arrive at the conclusion that in this case, the symmetry between diffusons and cuprons is not broken, and you have your reduction factor equal to the universal value of 2, in spite of the fact that you have time-dependent Hamiltonian. So noise does not effectively destroy the symmetry between diffusons and cuprons, which is associated with the time reversal symmetry. Now, what happens with the harmonic pumping is completely different, because if I now average over the variable Xi, then there will be still dependence on tau and t, and this is a harmonic dependence. And let's suppose that the amplitude of the field, external field, AC field, is so big that this guy is bigger than that. So then, for the noise, we have defacing rate like that, and it is constant. For the case of harmonic field, we have defacing rate which depends on time itself. So that there are some time intervals repeating each period where this defacing by external field is effectively switched off. So I call this no defacing windows. And at very large amplitude, one can forget about all other regions, because the defacing here is so strong that all the phase coherence phenomena, like conductance fluctuations, like magnetic resistance, everything is killed. And only in the vicinity of defacing, no defacing windows, all the mesoscopic phenomena exist, and this is the regions of interest. Now, now we can understand very easily the difference between the suppression of conductance fluctuations by noise and by harmonic field. So noise suppresses much stronger simply because this gamma is of high level everywhere. Harmonic pumping is effective only here, and the size of these windows is proportional to one of the square root of intensity. The size means where this guy is smaller than that guy. So this is simply because of the parabolic dependence near the minimum, that the size is proportional to one of the square root of intensity. And this is basically the main dependence on the intensity. So the main dependence is simply the phase volume, the volume of the fraction of the period where mesoscopic phenomena can exist. So this is the difference between the noise and the harmonic field. Now let's imagine the situation where we have not one single harmonic field, but two harmonic fields, a superposition of them. Then the corresponding function, defacing function, will look like that. And if we again invoke this notion of no defacing windows, so we may say that only regions near the minima of these defacing functions contribute to mesoscopic phenomena, and then all depends on the distribution of imaginary parts of, the distribution of heights of this minima. So the minima, which are very close to the real, very close to zero, contribute the most, and those who are further away from the zero axis, they contribute less. So that all depends on the distribution of such minima, or equivalently on the distribution of complex zeros of these equations, where this function is zero or that function is zero. So then it is clear that if you have a periodic signal, so there are real zeros in this for this equation if these two frequencies are commensurate and this guy is periodic. If they are incommensurate, so it is very difficult to meet the condition where this zero and that zero, it's impossible. And then you have zeros of these equations which are complex, and this makes this no-defacing windows less effective. So it is clear that the commensurability must play a role, and this is again the result of. This is basically the theoretical formula evaluated numerically in the case where the temperature is very small and the intensity is large. So you see a rich structure and enhancement of the variance of conductance fluctuations at commensurate points. Now. Now, what about effects of time reversal breaking? So one can consider a simple case where the temperature is high enough. So that was the zero temperature. But if temperature is high enough, one can go further and solve everything analytically. So one can find the diffusion and the Couperon contribution to the variance of conductance fluctuations. And it has a very fine structure. So there is some delta function-like factor, which is basically the spectral line shape. So if you have not just delta function harmonic field, but you have some harmonic field with some width. So you have two such harmonic fields with certain line shape function, and you see that the contribution comes only when the argument is close to zero. Then there is an amplitude, and the amplitude depends on the intensity of the field. This is the MacDonald function, and so very simple construction. And basically what happens is this, you should take into account only such N and M, which make this argument zero, and it is easy to understand that this problem is basically the problem of projection of sites in a two-dimensional lattice, so the lattice in the frequency or time domain. This is lattice with coordinates N and M, and there is a line with the tangents equal to omega 1 by omega 2, and all these peaks which I have been describing is simply the projection of these sides, each one having the width equal to the line shape width onto this line. So it's basically the problem of that sort. So you are somehow driving through the forest, and this forest is artificial, that's why it is on the grid, and each tree has some thickness, and you see through this forest, and those who had such experience know that there are some windows of transparency, some windows of complete intransparency. And what is important is that intensity of the external field determines only the size of the forest. because this is MacDonald function which falls off when the argument is large, so that the size of the forest is the square root of intensity. So if intensity is small, it's basically several trees, so nothing interesting happens. If intensity gets larger, this is a big forest, and you have all this stuff with number theoretical stuff, actually, with the projection like this. Now, then what happens with the reduction factor? So if you take this formula and just plot it for the signal of that form, you will see that the factor may deviate strongly from the universal value of 2, and this deviation happens at certainly at conventional points. But what is interesting is that you see there are only fractions for which either numerator or denominator is odd. So, for instance, 1/3 is not present. One is not present. So why? And the answer is very simple. If you look at that form, you will easily understand that if the ratio of these two is such that that it is commensurate, so it is P by Q, and both P and Q are odd, then you have such relationship. So you may find such a shift after which the vector potential becomes odd function. So because we are dealing with a stationary regime, the shift in time should not give rise to any effect. So the expression for time reversal invariance in this case is such: if you find such a shift that after which the vector potential will be an odd function of time and the electric field will be an even function of time, at that point time reversal symmetry will work even for the periodic time dependence, and it will kill the deviation from the universal value of 2. And that happened here for the fraction 1/3 and so on. So this is how time reversal symmetry works and how it is formulated, how it should be formulated for the harmonic signal, for the periodic signal. Now, this is basically the substitute for the conclusion. The conclusion basically is that the spectral content or precise time dependence of the signal do matters. That noise is much different from the harmonic signal, and it is different from the biharmonic signal. And and here there are intensity dependencies in all these cases which have been studied. So first of all, for noise, the intensity dependence is the strongest one, so the suppression is high. If you have biharmonic incommensurate, it is a little bit, by the logarithmic factor, different from that, but it is still very large suppression. But if we have periodic signal, then the suppression is much smaller. But what is important here is that there could be situations where you cannot find such a shift that the vector potential is an odd function, and in this case you have peaks or dips in the reduction factor. It deviates strongly from the universal value of 2, and that signals on the effective breakdown of time reversal symmetry. And that is not only for this quantity. The same thing happens for any mesoscopic phenomena sensitive to time reversal symmetry. For instance, that happens for weak localization, magnetoresistance, and many other phenomena. So thank you very much.
How do you define time reversal symmetry for a time-dependent Hamiltonian? Like if Hamiltonian is constant in time, then I understand you consider some motion, then at a certain point in certain time you reverse the velocities and if the system follows the same trajectory
okay.
in first order, then it's time reversal. But if you have some periodic signal or even noise,
Okay. I understand. So the difficulty with defining the what is time reversal symmetry here is this: we are studying the stationary regime. So we are studying the field is acting forever, and we are studying the DC conductance. This is a stationary regime. That's why the origin of time does not play any role. It shouldn't play any role because we are staying forever here. We are studying the DC conductance, okay? That's why the definition of what is time reversal symmetry and what is not meets difficulty, and I this question is totally legitimate. So what I'm doing is this. Instead of defining time reversal symmetry, I look at the effect which are usually associated with the lack of time reversal symmetry, and I see how strong they are. So one of these effects is this reduction factor. Another effect considered by Alenier and Vavilov is violation of the Anzaga relationship. So instead of going into definition, I study effects which are known to exist only if time reversal symmetry is there. And if I see deviations, I may judge how much it is effectively broken. That's my approach.
What determines the width of the commensurability peak?
Yes, it's also a very important question. It turns out that the width of the of this peak is determined only by the natural width of your time-dependent field. So you just illuminate it with the time-dependent field, and this natural width enters even if this width is much smaller than the escape rate. So what is amazing here that the escape rate for electron does not determine the width of the peak, even if it is much bigger.
Is there a similar resonance phenomenon in conductance itself, not in its variation?
In the average conductance?
Yes.
Because, yes, I think it is the same for the magnetoresistance. So if you consider the simplest effect, which is simply magnetoresistance, you apply AC field, which you don't see, it's very, very, very high frequency, right? You cannot register it. And you study just average conductance, you study the average conductance in a mesoscopic sample, then I think all this phenomena will take place. So I cannot show you the calculations since I didn't do it, but I'm pretty sure that. So
you mentioned in the beginning this reduction factor for the harmonic phase, maxwell phase, would be equal to short and
short. Yes, yes. So, yes, there are basically several regimes in temperature because there are several characteristic parameters of energy. And actually, there are four. But two of them are simple. One of them is when temperature is much smaller than the escape rate, and this is the lowest temperature. And the highest temperature, when the temperature is larger than then the width of distribution function, which happens because of heating. So you see, when you have the harmonic field, you just have diffusion in the energy space. Okay, and for the time of for the time electron spends inside the dot, the energy will diffuse for some distance. So it is omega a square root of number of steps. Okay, and if temperature is bigger than that, this depends on intensity. So the higher is intensity, the higher must be temperature. If the temperature is bigger than that, then this, another simple regime occurs. So what is the difference between them? The difference is that if temperature is very high, you can consider energy distribution function in the time domain as the delta function. It is local. So that that means that all everything is local in time, and then all these reasons about time reversal symmetry, all they apply because they apply to the local function. If you have low temperature, you have non-locality in time, and then what happens is this. At high temperature, there is a large sensitivity to the phase of one of these two harmonic components. So if you change phase, you basically change the time dependence, and you may go away from the condition which I call of anti-symmetricity of vector potential. So at high temperature, there is the sensitivity to phase. At low temperature, and you may find such a phase that certain commensurability peaks would not appear. But if you have a non-locality which happens at low temperatures, it is effectively the averaging over the phase. And then what happens is that all these exception points where some certain peaks will not appear, all of them become not effective and you have all the peaks. So the difference is that, okay, I don't have this picture, but the difference is that at low temperatures, you have all the commensurability peaks. At high temperature, you have these peaks, some of peaks may disappear depending on the phase of one of the phase difference between two harmonic components. So somehow the case of high temperature is much more sensitive.
These AC
yes.
Observations have to be before you can see.
Yes. 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 I expected this question because I expected this question. Look, what is important for me is that the size of the forest is big. Okay. Otherwise, I don't see all these commensurability effects. And the size of the forest is the square root of the dimensionless intensity. And the dimensionless intensity is basically controlled by this parameter. So it is a very simple physical parameter. It is energy which electron acquires along the size of your system divided by the quantum of the field. And if you estimate this for not nano system but for mesosystem of micron size, so if this is 1 micron and this is 10 to 9, it's usual radio frequency, not radio, but okay, so usual frequency which is used here, then electric field is as much as 1 volt per meter. So I would not say this is too much.
Okay. So to stay on schedule, I think we'll thank you.
Thank you.